Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare PDAX. Also powered by PodMachine, the simplest way to grow and edit your podcast. Sign up now at podmachine.com and use the code HustleShare to get one free edit.
Building the team, there really has to be no ego, especially if you're dealing with a team that has like a large disparity in experience. Like, and that's why this company is very special, because this would have never been born in a normal situation, right?
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baitiong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Share Podcast. We are with a brand new team that's been on stealth mode for a while, but now they come out with a bang. Because again, I've kind of known about the startup for a while. You know, you're in the down low when you know there's an amazing team that's happening already out there, but people don't know it. But now we can talk about it openly because they just raised, just recently, $2 million to again put another solid startup in the metaverse that is purely Filipino made. But let's talk about that in a bit, because we have to welcome their teammates. Of course, the CEO, Mr. JD Laborada, and their product lead, Berna Misa of Playdex. Whoop, whoop. Welcome to the show, JD and Berna. All right, no worries. And again, this is amazing. Congratulations on your recent race, right? It's in the NFT metaverse and whatnot. But again, let's go straight to the jugular this time. And I'm going to have to ask you both the $1 million question. Guys, what's your hustle?
Well, Playdex is an NFT rental marketplace for gaming. I think how we see ourselves is, you know, a distribution channel for gaming NFTs. the easiest way to explain it to people, I guess, who are not familiar with NFT gaming is, you know, in Web 2, where you would buy gaming licenses to play games, that would come in the form of buying the NFT in Web 3. And what we're really trying to do with Playdex is trying to make it easier for people to get onboarded or to be able to get access to these NFTs, you know, helping scale that system.
Got it. All right. That's amazing. And again, we're going to go tech today. I kind of missed doing that because sometimes I get really unjargon. And this is the core of this podcast, right? We can talk about tech all you want. And if you are drowning and you're like, what the fuck are these guys talking about? Don't worry. We have show notes on hustleshare.com. Just in case you're in transit or you don't have a computer in front of you. All right. Before I get carried away again, I need you to buckle up, guys, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. All right. We are now in the quantum realm. Because I want to understand, right? We ride the Hustle Share time machine because no startup was just made from nothing where it becomes successful. All of it is a culmination of all our hustles prior that prepared you for this moment. Now, let's start with Berna, okay? Because you're the coolest girl in this town, right? I want to understand, right? So you're both developers, correct?
Actually, I'm more of a data scientist. So data science engineer. Yeah, it's also under software engineering, but more on the data side of things.
Which is better. So sorry, JD, I need you to sit in the back seat real quick. I'll talk to Berna real quick. So Berna, you're a data scientist, and man, who's the last data person that I've talked to? I don't even remember. Probably Step C.
Stephanie C of Thinking Machines.
Yes, that's a long time ago. Right? Okay. But yeah, I want to understand, right? Before you became a data scientist, what was growing up like for you? Were you really fascinated with tech and whatnot, or is this something that came along while you were in college?
Actually, ever since I was a kid, I was really excited about innovations or cool stuff, right? And you know, sci-fi films.
Okay,
but I guess what really reinforced my love for tech, as cliche as it may seem, was really Robert Downey Jr.
It's RDJ.
RDJ. Like, I love him 3,000 times, not right. just as a character, but also as a person. So it's really that Iron Man film that unlocked my passion to actually pursue tech.
Got
you know,
it.
Yeah,
sounds
that's
good.
That's. Yeah, that's it.
What about him? Because again, he has, as a person, he has a pretty colorful past, I'd say that, you know.
He's
done weird movies like Tropic Thunder, which, by the way, for me, is my all-time favorite RDJ movie of all time. It's not the Iron Man. It's Tropic Thunder. Right.
Interesting.
I love comedy, always.
Okay. What about him, right? So more than the film Iron Man itself, it's the story of how he came to be casted on it, right? Like, it was during a defining moment in his time. It was really his chance to start something new again. And because he didn't give that up, he was able to create something beautiful. Well, the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe started with that film.
Yep.
And yeah, I was really inspired by that. Like, I was so... I was a fan of the film that I actually, you know, researched about RDJ and then how he came about. It's really that whole thing.
All right.
And also the quote in some Marvel films about, when did you become an expert on physics or that specific thing? And he said, oh, I just started on the internet overnight. So like that meme, I don't know if like, I don't know, that quote struck me and I was like, oh yeah, that's, you know, your typical digital citizen right now.
That's amazing. All right. Now, JD, I'm not going to keep you waiting that much because I know you're hungover from Poblacion, and Poblacion is a higher level of LU. Oh. How was your early start in falling in love with tech? Because again, we're talking about origin stories here. So if Verna's origin story originated from RDJ. How about you? Did it start from Natasha Romanoff or anybody else? Just kidding. How did you start falling in love with tech early on in your life?
Well, I guess I never did really like fall in love with tech specifically. I actually decided to go into computer science like when I was filling out my OPCAT form.
Oh, wow.
So like asking my dad's friend who was back then working as a VP in Asia, like he basically asked his friend, you know, what would be, you know, the right course to take. And that's when I took computer science. But I guess maybe the earliest exposure I would have to tech would be, you know, maybe gaming. Because back when I was in, I think elementary, I was playing a game called Flife. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
Don't carbon date me, but I'll just say yes. But I really don't know.
one of the level up games before, and yeah. I think we kind of ran a business around it. So we would have people who would be creating characters and leveling them up.
Your early play decks.
Yeah. And then we would then sell the accounts. I would sell it to some students in our high school. Like for 500 pesos, you know, like I kind of see it like as the
foreshadowing.
First, the first I never knew, you know, you'd go back to that, but tech wise, I
first played
when I went into UP, that was the first time I wrote code. Like I learned Hello World inside the classroom.
All right, that's amazing. How about you, Bernal? I'll go back to you. For your path was data scientist. And obviously, can we just define that path a little bit? Because again, that can be a little big, especially for people who don't even understand tech and they're listening to this right now. How did you get into the data scientist career path and what did you take up?
Okay, that's interesting. Because originally, I love the business side of things. I initially took up business administration and accountancy in university and ended up hating accountancy. And the second year, I shifted to computer science. So the thought process there was, I was taking up this management information systems class and I really enjoyed it. And also when I was taking up accountancy, I loved the financial side. So I was into stocks, trading, finance. And having learned the basics of finance, right, trading, I wanted to automate it. And the reason I wanted to go to computer science was really just to do algorithmic trading, automated trading. But when it got into computer science, it's like going into music. Like you just have to know the fundamentals and you can create anything. So that's the power of like programming or engineering in general, right? And since I have this weird love of like finance and then tech and basically it's data, right? It's insights more than the building of things. That's how I got into like data science, because you can apply it into different things.
Yeah. That is amazing. All right. Now, I'll double down a little bit on your story. So you got into data science, but how did that start to become a real career path? Because there's not a lot of data science jobs out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of data science roles, but in reality, when you get there, it's not really data science. They just like to call it like that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you're right, because like when I was looking for an internship, there's a lot of like FAD out there. And it's really a lot of research. So there's no data science internship position, but I emailed Gcash or, you know, Mint, because their chief risk officer, I don't know if JF is still there, JF Dari. So he used to be a quant trader in UBS. So I researched with him and they were really like a top notch. And that's how I got an internship there, because again, like my background was, I was an accountancy major before, and then I shifted to computer science. So I was really like fintech was really my thing. Yeah. And I wanted to learn more the practical side of it. So that's how that's how it all fell into place.
Yeah. All right. Now let's talk about JD a little bit again. It's JD. Sorry, ha, if you are hungover, I hope you make it through the whole episode.
To again, be fair,
coming from the party guy, my first startup was in nightlife. You can easily recover, just hydrate all the time, okay? Or eat your comfort food, okay? Okay, for you, how did this internship all the way through, you know, being an engineer path complete?
Yeah, so, I mean, being an engineer was like, when I started computer science, it was kind of like a straight road, like a straight line, right? Like heading to, you know, becoming a software engineer. I guess, you know, when I was in college, I think working like my last year, found like a remote job and you know, just kind of accepted any opportunity that came my way. I think Zendit was like a curveball, I guess, because I kind of quit software engineering after 2 years out of college. Because I was doing web zero businesses, but then, you know, pandemic hit, right? And so when the pandemic hit, tourism was hit. So like my business was like going down, you know, like zero income. Employees had to be, you know, had to have some sort of allowance, and I had to go back to work. That's when actually Berna and I got to work together again. We were working on the contact tracing application in La Union, Tarana, with Carlo Almendral. And that's how I got back into tech, you know, I was trying to see, you know, what way I can help, in what ways can I help the community get back on its feet, right? So, and then after that, I met Ron.
The most important Ron in the ecosystem. I'm just the loudest guy. Right? Ron Hose is the complete opposite of who I am. Silent, but just a killer. That's what he is, right?
Yeah. And then I met Yang. Yang offered me then, after building the project, offered me to join Zendit as a software engineer. She said, you know, we can work together in like building payment infrastructure for the Philippines. And I saw that as an opportunity to work on scaled, you know, a scaled system with, you know, like built in a certain way that would scale. That's something that I never had touched before, because I was working in startups, you know, my first 2 years before I quit after. Yeah. So that's kind of what happened with the software engineering side.
All right, sounds good. Now, here's a million-dollar question before we take our first break. I've been around devs for a while, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but this is just my sheer observation being a non-tech dev founder. So just to give you a background, this is my third startup now. My startup is called Podcast Network Asia. It's the biggest podcast network in Southeast Asia. But my first startup was a nightlife app. Second startup was actually a dev shop. I'm the founder of ChatBotPH. I got that acquired, luckily, after my first one failed. So 1-1. Hopefully this one puts me either a big loss or a big win. So high stakes, right? But here's the thing. So especially being around devs for almost 10 years now, would you agree that, and I want to understand how you did this in your careers, the best devs that I encounter have this innate ability to self-educate. Because I also encounter a lot of devs, especially when you're doing interviews, and they're raw as hell when they come out of college because they didn't put the work prior. But the ones that are really good started early, did not rely on what theory, because they always say, majority of the time they say, oh, what they're teaching us in school is shit, right? So you have to really get real life experience and come to learn that. So this is my question. Was that something you had to do early on while you were in college? And if yes, what stack did you guys learn? Because I'm looking at both your LinkedIn, and both of you are full stack people, right? And in order for you to really create amazing products, you need to understand how front end and back end works and how they talk together. Because if you're just, oh, I'm going to create an API, and the API is not properly made for somebody else to use on the other side, and good luck. How is that for both of you? Berna.
Okay. I guess I just want to define first the terms, right? Because when you say development, that's a whole like jargon in its own. So our background is really computer science. So the science of computing. So the main difference of computer science and computer engineering is computer science focuses on the software side of things, right? Computer engineering more on the machine, the hardware side. And there are frameworks wherein if you're a software engineer, I'm air quoting software engineer versus developer, because as a software engineer, you're an engineer. There's a difference between, if for example, in software engineering, you're building software, right? You're engineering software. There's a difference between building a house, because anyone can build a house, but not everyone can build like a high story 300 building. So that's the difference. If you know the like the frameworks of like software engineering in general. So because usually, right, the question of like which stack did you like learn, etc. That's like the secondary questions already. Because at the fundamental, you have to know the principles behind it, the engineering principles. So that's my take on it. And again, like it's all about like problem solving. So yes, it's also about self-education and to some extent, but you have to learn the fundamentals.
Yes, but okay. I'll just ask you from your end, say, okay, there's the fundamentals, you learn that probably in school, right? Because that's what they teach you. Mm-hmm. But again, they only give you the key. You have to go through the door. How did you, what stack then, or what path led you to the self-education thing if you're going to be the RDJ that you're meant to be?
It's really being smart about your questions on the internet. it's really that, and also like
I like that.
Mm-hmm. There's a meme, right, that you can, that software engineers just Google things on, yep, Stack Overflow. Because again, there is merit in knowing which questions to ask. Because and that's the main difference between newbies and like people with experience. Because the framing of question part, that's a harder thing to actually do. Yeah, like knowing what you know or not knowing what you don't know. Those little things.
Got it.
I'm not sure if I'm making sense. But
no, it does, because I've seen. All right, I've seen this in action. Where noobs will be like, copy pasta there, or no, and not just that, they would, it's just superficial things like how to code in Node.js, for example. Oh, good luck. What are you gonna get, right? You're gonna get courses that will ask you to whatever, right? Or some people I go, they paste their whole freaking code. Or that line, and if it's legit or not, something like that. I've seen this, and I don't understand it, obviously, because I don't know shit about writing code. But I've seen how complex they search, and again, the better you search, the better results you get. For you, JD, how was that stack or self-education process, or at least the fundamentals? I learned something new today with Berna, right? Fundamental stack and the self-education process. What was that like for you?
Well, I completely agree with Berna. Well, we were from the same college. So, you know, having the fundamentals really helped understand things on, you know, at least on a high level, what they were supposed to do. And, you know, when you're developing code, the question that you're always asking is, you know, what are you trying to achieve, right? Like, what specific function are you trying to solve? And, you know, when you know what you're trying to do, it's easier to, again, look, because you're not going to have everything in your head. You're not going to have all these like different syntax or, you know, different applications, you know, in your head, like things that have already been built or or something that you would have to build yourself. Mm-hmm. So you know, you would have to know, you know, what parts are you're really missing, you know, what parts you need to look up online and see, you know, how people have done it before, what the best practices are. And you can only do that if you actually start writing code. Right. You know, you can imagine how, you know, the web interface, you know, the web client would interact with the server and things like that. But then in reality, you just have to like get in there and see, you know, what parts of the code you have to start writing. You know, how do you start segmenting, you know, the different functions to make it more, I guess, portable and reusable, right? So it's learning how to solve a problem one by one.
How I would say it.
That kind of, like, for me, that's like one of the most important things I learned in programming. Which you can really apply, you know, in life, right? Like learning how to solve problems one by one and not being overwhelmed by one big, like, hey, build me this, right? Like how am I, you know, like if you think about all the things that you're gonna do at once, nothing's gonna happen. You know, you have to, like, you can't play whack-a-mole, right? Like you gotta make sure that you're kicking each task out systematically, you know, in the best order possible.
And that's the essence of startups right there, right? At the end of the day, we are solving problems with technology. That's why it's a startup, right? So again, not all businesses are startups. There are SMEs, but startups are meant to solve problems using technology at scale. All right, now let's take our first break. And when we come back, let's now talk about how you eventually got to work together, how you developed that chemistry, and how you eventually, again, decided to be on stealth mode until everybody, and then we popped out and created Playdex and raised $2 million. Let's talk about that more after the break.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back from break. We are still with Berna and JD, who have told us again their origin story. Okay, if I use etymology, that doesn't sound as thick. So origin story of them as superheroes. But again, this is not the first time we've worked together, right? In the middle of the pandemic, or just to start the pandemic, you were working together in this AI startup. I know a thing or two about AI, but because my second startup again was chatbot, but not full blown AI. It was NLP. basic, right? Compared to ML and all these other complex things. So walk to me how you guys worked together first and what were the things you guys were building there? JD?
Well, we were working on like two sides of the company. I think Berna was, you know, working on the AI, the data science part. I was working on the software, you know, software engineering part, basically helping them implement what they had built, like in that side. I think the work dynamic there was, you know, they would have certain asks for me. You know, they would need certain tools to be built, and then I would be the one, you know, help them implement that.
Yeah, Bern is laughing. I don't know why. Maybe you were writing shitty code, but
okay. Yeah.
What stack were you guys doing back then? I just want to understand, because back in Chatbot, our stack was Node, Angular, and then we went Node React, and then serverless. That's how we did shit. What was the AI that you guys were building here?
I'm just gonna backtrack a bit. Because like the story of how we actually got to work together again was very interesting, right? So I was I got into the startup earlier, right? So that's an AI startup, 06, and the focus of that AI startup is to do AI for impact things. And as probably not everyone knows, but implementing AI in businesses is actually very expensive. Yep. Hence, what this startup wants to achieve is that make AI more accessible to, to more impact things, right? And we wanted to do more interesting things. Hence, we were doing projects related to like, how do you make ethical AI? So it touched on AI ethics, etc. And we also had the opportunity to actually create something of impact and help during the pandemic. Hence, we had this project in La Union. And that's how I actually contacted JD. Because JD is a friend of mine during college. And again, like as he said earlier, right, he was a business owner there. So he actually owns Rada Hostel, right? So grab it, cool story in Rada. Maybe for a different hustle share naman yet. But the goal of the project there was to help how do you jumpstart businesses again in the pandemic, especially tourism businesses, because this was badly hit, right? And how do you do that through technology, right? So we actually wanted to do, you know, parang mag-create ng bubble sa Lonyon, right? So hence the contact tracing app, among other things. And that's why I hit up JD. Because he is like one of the kumbaga fit na people to work on it, because he has a software engineer background and he actually lives there.
And so ganun yung naging work there. How
yes, exactly. And exactly, and he has a hostel, and that's how we got to work together. And you know, just sharing the software engineering side, us on the product side, etc. So yeah, AI on the other AI projects, we have clients in San Francisco, New York, etc.
Nice.
But for La Union, right, the project that we were working on is that one, the is a contact tracing app, among other things.
That was a partnership with the DOT.
Yeah. Nice. Yes. And at the start of the pandemic, everybody was just scrambling for any type of tech. I've seen I'm laughing because I've seen shitty apps just do scale. Like, what the fuck is this? Who built this thing? Right? But again, it's something rather than nothing. So I'm not going to throw shit on anybody's work. But I've seen varying degrees of scanner apps and whatever. Like, where the hell are you storing this data, right? Because if some incompetent back-end guy did the database of this, one false move, you're already exposing everybody's data, right?
Oh, it's probably out there, Ron. Right? It's probably out there.
No, it is. And that's why we get these random, hey, do you want a job? I'll give you 9K. It's like random.
exactly.
Right? And that's why. Good luck. That data is just being sold repeatedly. For sure. But okay, before we now talk about Playdex, you split up a little bit more for a bit to work on separate hustles. Can you guys talk about that a little bit, JD, on how you parted ways a little bit after 06 and then eventually come together down the road? But what were the things that you did after 06?
Yeah, so after 06, that's when I joined Zendit. I worked on the direct debit team. So we worked on integrating different banks to allowing them to port into different merchants through the direct debit service.
Got it.
I was also trying to jumpstart the hostel, which was closed for a few months, and we saw some spurts in like tourism during the pandemic and I also tried to take advantage of that, trying to see if my way could generate income again as a web zero business, which is what Verna said around the hostel in the Onion. And I think that was the hiwalay na kami. And then when we got together again, that was because of Playturn already.
Wait, real quick. I want to understand first, because not everybody gets a chance to work in a unicorn. Okay. Zendit, again, is one of the best platforms out there in terms of this. What was that experience like working in a unicorn? I know you're still there for barely a year and change, right? But what was that like? How different is it to be a dev under in a unicorn that's really out to dominate the whole Southeast Asia region?
Yeah. Well, I guess the main difference is you're not working with four people. You're working with 50, 100 people.
Wow. Right?
It's not something that, hey, build this and then you're not going to have to talk to anyone and then that's it. What you're building has to harmonize with what the rest of the company is building. And what I learned from Zendit is being able to, I've never seen a scaled engineering team outside of Zendit, and I would say it was, for me, Zendit was the best job that I guess before Playdex. It was the best job I've ever had, because I was really impressed and what from what I saw with how engineering was scaled, how developers in the company, like even me, had ownership of what we were building. We had ownership, and that's not an easy thing to do, right? Especially when you have like 500 employees in the company. Having even the developers themselves have ownership, getting to decide which products they want to build, how they want to build it. And for me, that's very important.
That's amazing. Now, Berna, from your end, what was the next step in your career?
Oh, okay. After 06, just a bit of context, right? So I joined 06 at the height of the pandemic. So that was around like April 2020. And then, so it's a lot of things happening, et cetera. It's your startup hustle. And I quit around December because I had to take a break, right? I was like, it's the pandemic effect. I just wanted a breather, right? I used to eat AI research papers for breakfast. So I really needed a life check basically. So I took a month of rest. So January, right? Just thinking, okay, what should I do next? Should I rest more? Yeah, or like figure out what I wanted. I mean, I love tech, I still love AI, but I don't want to, I want to tone it down a bit. So I just took like a teaching job in Singapore. Just teaching AI to Singaporean citizens. Again, because for me, that's already basic, right? So from a cognitive level, that's a cognitive rest for me. And because I have all this free time or lesser cognitive load, right? I was able to learn a new thing. And that's how I actually got into the metaverse or the rabbit hole. Because during the December of 2020, you were hearing all-time highs, right? And then it piqued my curiosity, because what's blockchain technology? What's happening there? Because again, like, I was in this AI bubble. Like, there's a lot of interesting things happening in AI. Maybe you've known about deepfakes. Then it was like the GAN model was just amongst like AI folks, but now it's more mainstream. Maybe you're familiar with VTube, etc. Your TikTok filters, that one. And then again, like, the last time I actually looked into blockchain was when I was still in college, because I fell in love with AI. That's why I pursued it, right? But again, like, because I had that moment of rest, yeah, I decided to like jump in. What's blockchain? Why is it like, is it a scam or whatever? And I studied the technology, and I was like, oh my God, I totally geek out, because it's literally data. I mean, one of the problems in AI or data science is that, well, data scientists or AI engineers, they're not necessarily better, because they're better AI engineers or data scientists across the board, but it's most of the time they have better access to quality data. That's it. But on the blockchain, yo, you didn't have that problem. And again, as a person with a data background, I geeked out, because yep. It's literally,
like, you saw the Holy Grail.
It's a fair game. Exactly. And again, like, my background from finance and then tech and then data, it all just made sense. And yep. That's how I got into the rabbit hole. And it's so it's a period of like learning. I thought the speed of research in AI was already exponential, but no. In blockchain, it was like 10x of that. And I was even baffled, because again, in my head, I'm in technology. Oh. I'm a technologist. How could I have missed this whole vertical like for the past X years? I mean, my lab during college was also networks and distributed systems. So it really just, it kind of like stars aligned for me. Yeah. Going into the rabbit hole, I traded, etc. I did different things, but fundamentally, I understood that, oh my God, I thought AI was a technology that's going to bring a lot of like impact and change. Well, it will still do, right? But when I studied blockchain, I think it will be faster also. Like, this is also one of the more, I guess, exciting things and more mainstream people will get, because it has the culture aspect of it. So that's what I did after 06 degen mode. That's it.
Got it. But also, just one thing that under LinkedIn, you were in EIR stealth mode for almost half a year, or a year, or again, was that Playdex, or is this something else that you tried to build?
No, this is my degen mode, right? Because I was also that's how I got into like running a guild, right? I was participating into different DAOs. Again, that's how.
Wow.
funnily, right? Because like I just put that in my bio, because like entrepreneur in residence. Because I was at home, it's everybody's working from home. But then
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but I didn't know that apparently that's a jargon that you only actually use that if you're part of like a whatever accelerator. A friend of mine actually had to actually had to point that out, because at some point some like contacted me, wanted me to like apply. I just didn't edit it, because I know it then. So I guess I'm just okay, that's just gonna be an interesting story to tell if it ever comes up. So
now it is. It really is in a podcast. And again, for context too, again, EIRs usually they do this in incubators, accelerators, or venture builders, right? That hey, you have an idea, you don't have a team, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now it makes sense. Now let's talk about LU, okay? Because before we talk about Playdex, I think the origin story here is La Union, right? Because again, yeah. I've been hearing murmurings about this, and I'm sorry, please don't cancel me. I haven't been to La Union. I'm a lazy driver.
Oh.
Like, too old. I missed the boat. I'm too old. I'm a married man. Like, I'm good. I have my own routine now. But walk me through this thing. What is happening in LU right now where the Luis Cias of the world, the Ron Hoses of the world, and there's this little tech movement that's not movement that that's now gaining steam. What's there, right? Because again, these things don't happen by accident. You guys coming to work together, Playdex coming to fruition. Is it JD's hostel that's the epicenter of this? Or what what happened here? Just these things don't happen by accident, right? Or if it's totally serendipitous, there has to be a trigger. What's going on there, tech-wise?
Well, I would say the trigger is John T. Sumulong of Flotsam and Jetsam.
Yes.
So, I mean, we all met by chance.
Because of the DOT project, right?
Yeah. So, Ron was advising the DOT project with Carlo Almendral. And, you know, Ron was obviously in a different state in his life then.
He just exited.
Exit, set for life type of vibe. I'm trying to get there, okay?
He was
as the secondary Ron. I'm trying to get there too, Ron Ho. So,
yeah. So I mean, you know, we were lucky, right? Like we were just so lucky. You know, to get to meet these people in a different setting. Usually, if me and Berna, we were in Manila, we would never have met him. He would have never met us, and we would not have, you know, conversations that didn't need an agenda. And for me, you know, those conversations are, you know, what really changed, like, and made us grow. This all wouldn't be possible without John C. Sumulong's, you know, vision for what he wanted La Union, and he wants La Union to be. He wants La Union to be, you know, the Sandhill Road of the Philippines, right? Like where people can meet. And you know, we saw a glimpse of that in the pandemic. You know, Ron came in, and then Luis arrived, and then other people came also like Johnny Bates.
Yang was also there.
Yang Zhang, yeah, Johnny Bates, former head of and yeah, I mean, we had a neutral ground basically. You know, like these. Mm-hmm. These guys, some of them were competing against each other, but you know, in La Union, you leave that, you know, like at the door, right? Like
it's a surf town.
we were able to talk about the other side of life, I think that's the most amazing thing that's happened to me personally, because I got to be mentored by the best people in the industry. When I was a nobody in like a surf town, like 250 kilometers north of La Union, of Manila, right? Like I would have never gotten that chance. Bruno probably had a better chance than me, but you know, like LU, that was what LU did.
Yeah.
We want to keep doing that. And I think we want to keep doing this for the next generation as well.
That's the best pitch. Okay, yeah, go, Berna.
No, basically, that's really what happened, right? What happened there was something magical because imagine two kids and then everyone else is like already at a different part of their life, right? Yeah, and just like it's kind of like a natural, not just knowledge transfer, but it's the wisdom in that. I mean, it's really that, just hanging out and your conversations on the lineup. And because it's just a little town, right? You got to actually eat together, break bread together, you know, exercise together. It's that whole it's that whole lifestyle and environment that really like made an imprint on us. And it wouldn't have been possible without someone like John C, who's really a great community builder, like bridging the, you know, tech people and the locals, or just really the whole like community. It's that. It's like the welcoming committee. It felt like home. Yeah.
There you go.
And it was during the pandemic. So
yeah,
it was all those things at once.
So if there's a massive exodus of startup founders from Manila because of this episode, there you go. Go up there and, you know, maybe you'll get to play your own play decks very soon.
It may not be this call, Ron. I, if you want that to happen, I would, you know, invite John C. to this podcast.
There you go.
And I think you will not regret it. One of the most brilliant person, you know, like out there, you know, on the level of like Ron, on the level of the Victor Paternos,
yeah,
the world, you know, like you will enjoy that conversation.
John C, we got your invite. So
lots of, yep.
There you go. All right, we'll discuss that. But before we take our last break, how did all of this magical movement, you know, turn into a $2 million raise? And let's talk about Playdex first, because again, Web3 obviously is the future, right? No matter how much we fight it, it's inevitable, right? We're right in that transition period between Web2 to Web3, right? Similar to how we did Web 1.0 to Web 2.0. Took several years, but inevitably, we're all going to be Web3, right? And Web2 people like me will be passing, right? We're going to cross that chasm. But why NFTs and why, rental? How did this come together and to becoming Playdex? JD.
Yeah. So, I mean, we personally, you know, Bruno was the first one in the space of it. I saw everything unfold as everyone did, right? I started my own guilds, you know, saw how the space was forming. And I think the reason why NFTs and gaming, you know, it's the way to go, is because it unlocks so much value that wasn't there before. You know, the traditional gaming space had a simple model, right? It was, you would have the game developers and you would have distribution through, you know, Steam or through Garena, like some form of like license agreement. And that just changes with NFTs, because with NFTs, that's now your gateway into a game, and each gateway is not the same, right? Like each NFT has its own characteristic, you know, like on the back end, it may seem like, oh, it's just a dictionary of words, but then it represents more. It represents more than that, because it's able to unlock value. Like the economy that we're seeing is, you know, now you have, instead of having just game developers and gamers, now you have like different groups of people forming or doing certain things, right? Like you would have the guilds of the world, the YGG, which, you know, Gabby Dizon pioneered. And you would have the breeders, right? You would have the crafters, right? Which now turn into this amazing company, BreederDAO. And then you would have groups of like, actually some are just guilds, so like competitive people trying to play the game. And you would have then also the investors who would do research on the game economies, you know, seeing how the sustainability is, trying to solve the sustainability side of the game. So it's turning into a, you know, each game instead before, which was, you know, just an experience that you would shelf after 3 months, it's now a world that's being, you know, like built and that you can explore. I mean, imagine this, right? Like we're talking like first generation Web3 gaming. The games aren't even that good yet, and you're getting this much traction. You know, imagine when games are actually good and you have like stickier players that, you know, are willing to do it not just because of money but also because of I guess being competitive, right? Which is essentially the core of what gaming should be. I think that's why NFTs are the way to go.
All right, that's very exciting. All right, now let's take our last break and then we come back. Let's now talk about how you then grew Playdex, built the product, and all the way through how you raised $2 million. All right, well, let's talk about that more after the break.
Hey, Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey, Hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer, trust Dragon Pay.
And we're back in the break. We are still with Berna and JD, who then now told us why they created Playdex. But again, ideas are cheap, but execution is gold. So now, you know, you've had an amazing line of mentors or partners with the Ron Hoses and the Luis Cias and the world. But how did you build the team in order to tackle the problem of the NFTs and play to earn as the future, right? Because here's the thing. When something gets successful, it's a copycat league. Okay? Everybody will try to create their, oh, I want to be the next YGG. I want to be the next whatever, blah, blah, blah. A lot of them will try. A lot of them will fail. Right? But for you guys, you built a solid team backed by real legit founders who've done it all, exited and whatnot. How did you build the team to create then the product that we built?
My view on Web3 is that, you know, like it's very early. I guess at least in the Philippine landscape, Web3 is lacking a little bit of Web2, right? Meaning we need more builders in the space. We need more, like we need people who actually know how to build, you know, not a house, but a skyscraper, right? And I think how we built the team is, you know, we have people like, you know, Berna, who's the most knowledgeable in the Web3 space in our company. But, you know, you complement that, right? You complement that with people. I mean, Berna can build product also, but, you know, like, but you complement that with people who built it at scale, right? And that's why our co-founders are, you know, Thea Santos, who was the former head of ops and marketing at Coins. Edward Iskandarov, who is basically the one of the lead engineers at Coins, right? Like he basically built Coins together with the rest of the engineering team. So they know how to build at scale. They know how to, you know, they know the ins and outs of, like, you know, handling security, have like handling custodial wallets, you know, making sure that the the funds are safe. And yeah, I mean, and then there's Ron, right? Like, who's like also like helping lead product as well. And I also like Ron is our co-founder as well here. Yeah, I mean, that's really, you know, like, I think why, you know, we have a good chance to win is because we have a great team that, you know, doesn't have ego, that met, you know, at a state when things were going to shit and things didn't matter. And, you know, now that we're building this stuff, the personal side doesn't matter. What matters is, you know, we've agreed to be moving towards this direction, you know, having this mission of expanding this space. And, you know, no matter who comes up with the best decision, doesn't matter as long as we're making the best decision. And that's why it works, because even someone like Ron would defer to us for decisions, right? Like, it doesn't need to be, you don't need to have like the 10 years of industry experience, but, you know, we will find the right, we will find the best answer and make sure we choose that. So I think that's how, like, you know, building the team, there really has to be no ego in the team, especially if you're dealing with a team that has like a large disparity in experience. Like, I have less than 5 years of experience. Berna has less than 5 years of experience. And these guys, you know, Ron has 20 years. These guys have like 15 years, right? And you know, like, it wouldn't work if there was, you know, if there was politics in the company, it's like there was ego. And that's why this company is very special, because this would have never been born in a normal situation, right? LU Talaga, and, you know, like,
made in LU.
Yeah, and even, you know, we met at a very like unique stage in life where Ron would be blocking our IPs, Stack Overflow, while we were working, and then I would return the favor by putting chili peppers in his underwear, right? Like, you know, we were there, right? Like,
that's a true story, by the way.
That's why this works. It's because, you know, there's no ego in the team, and, you know, we're a family, right? Like, yeah. we're just a family.
Yeah, that's amazing. And again, you're dealing with people that have been there and done it, right? As well. So that's great. Let's talk about product. So, how did you build this Playdex platform that's now live, by the way? You should go to playdex.io. How did you build this? How long did this take, and how hard was it to build?
Coming from the background of, you know, because the founding team has experience already with building an exchange, right?
Yeah.
And there are similarities with building an exchange and then a marketplace. And the expertise also, or experience of JD or Dan with Zendit is actually somewhat similar to what we're doing here, because it's a marketplace, right? And we're integrating games into the platform, so we want to make it easy for players to be able to play NFT games in one platform, and that's how we're like building the product. And in terms of difficulty, it depends on the game side, right? Because again, there are different customization, etc. And as we integrate more games, we get to know how to do it faster and faster with each iteration. So of course, like, we started with Axie Infinity because that's the game that is, you know, like the flagship of Play to Earn. And that's the game that has the most in terms of scale, at least like before, right? And we're seeing some sort of that. And but yeah, that's how we actually are building the product and spotting like which games should be integrated next.
I think to add to that, to add to what Berna said, it is very similar to how payment gateway companies integrate with banks. Right, like, essentially, you know, we are building a market maker, but then, you know, we would have to work with how authorization works in that specific game. So that means that we would have to you know, work with their APIs to, in a way, simulate ownership off of the specific NFTs. And yeah, I would use the analogy that Ron gave me, like, you know, a year ago when he was starting Coins. It's very similar to when he was starting Coins, and they were integrating with merchants like, you know, MLU here, your Meralco,
right? Meralco.
And these guys didn't have APIs back then. Wala talaga.
Yep.
Parang, and I guess, well, right now, you know, we're way ahead, and the game developers can build stuff well. But I guess, like, we're in a similar situation where we have to co-build the rental marketplace with them. You know, if they are cooperative with us, we can push an integration out in a week, right? Because a simple change would make things just so much easier with us. And it's just like dealing with a new, like, for me, at least at Zendit, like, dealing with a new bank every time. A new game is like a new bank integration every time. You know, you would review what the flow would be for that specific game, how the rental would look like, and if rental was truly possible. So yeah, I mean, that's how we built the product so far. We're trying to move fast, you know, not like move fast, but not at the expense of like building a shit product behind the scenes. So, you know, we want to build it right and build it fast.
That is crazy. And again, this is also a testament of how your past hustles will just come in handy. So you got the marketplace builders in the Coins group, right? The Coins gang, per se. And you having the experience in Zendit. And of course, Berna having to patch this all together with now the data and that she now sees and says that it's way better than what we have in 2.0. Now, let's talk about the future, because at present and the future, $2 million. How did this happen? Because again, people will just salivate to even get this type of funding, especially in this type of climate. It's a shit show out there, right? And I'll probably have a podcast soon to discuss how bad is it and how can you navigate this as a startup founder or as a startup. But how did the $2 million seed funding happen?
This is the first time I actually, like, you know, fundraised. I was the one who did the fundraising. We were lucky enough, I guess. We were lucky enough to get introductions, you know, through Luis, mostly, and through some introductions from Ron. You know, we just really wanted to show them how much we saw and understood the space. How much, you know, like, you know, we were in ground zero. We have a good view of how Filipinos think and how Filipinos behave. This is where gaming NFT started. And, you know, we're a company that's trying to build something at scale that could potentially be, you know, disruptive in the future, right? Like, you know, we could be one of the biggest distribution arms of, you know, NFTs, and that's the dream, right? Like, we want to be that, and you know, we just had to make the investors understand that that's what we're trying to do, right? We're not here for the short term. You know, we took it the traditional way. You know, we built the product like an MVP first before we actually asked for funding, right? Because, you know, we showed them that, you know, we're the team that can execute this. We're the team that can build this and build it faster than everyone else in the market. You know, that's what that's one of the things that I was trying to prove when I was like talking to investors. But I didn't expect it to be this fast, because like we only fundraised for a couple of weeks when we were able to fill the round. You know, there are a lot of companies, great companies out there that are, you know, like, you know, on really great companies, like on the level of like us, but are having a hard time like fundraising. But, you know, we're fortunate enough to be in this space where, you know, there's more liquidity. People are, I guess right now you add the word crypto in your investment memo, you probably get some form of like multiplier in your valuation. We are lucky to be in that space, but yeah, I mean, it's just it's like what you said at the beginning of the, I think this call is, ideas are cheap. A rental marketplace idea is very cheap. Like, you know, like someone can come up with that, and a lot of people are building it. But the key thing to understand is, you know, like, who are the people to build it? And we're talking about building it with the people who built CoinsPH, you know, who built PayMongo, right? And I worked at Zendit, and Brinus worked on a lot of like Web3 projects also. So I think it's the team, right? Like, it's really the team.
And it's a holy triangle of team, TAM, traction. And the TAM is huge, obviously. Traction, for sure. With this type of team, it's inevitable. And again, massive congratulations for such an amazing job. And we'll be on the lookout for you. I have a good feeling it's not going to be the last time we're going to be in Hustle Share. But for people to check out, especially now that you're live, Berna, invite people over to go and check out Playdex. And where do they go and how do they do that?
Yeah, just go to playdex.io, connect your MetaMask, and join our Discord as well. It's discord.gg/playdex. You can also follow us on our socials at Playdex on Twitter, official Playdex on Facebook.
There you go. And what's next for you guys, JD, before I let you go? What should we look out for before we get you guys back here again?
I guess, look out for more partnerships, creative partnerships you wouldn't like think of. We're announcing some soon. Look out for more games.
There you go.
So, we'll go back to, what we're trying to do here. We'll try to provide in the fastest way as we can the best games, the best NFT games out there. Making it accessible to, the people who are interested in playing NFT games.
All right. Again, thanks, guys. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any type of podcast out there. If you see a 5-star rating, give us a 5-star. So if you also feel incentivized to keep doing this, though, I've been doing this for 3 years now. And if we did say some jargon, it's going to be the show notes on hustleshare.com. Don't worry. So again, you want to go dig a rabbit hole, just like how Berna did it. We'll put all the references there. And lastly, if you want to be part of our community, it's going to be the Hustle Share community on Facebook. Again, guys, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.